Hey everybody, Future Dave here on a less good mic before we begin. First, you'll hear a couple of references to this being episode 12 and the next one being 13. That's because originally it was that way, but we flip-flopped it to announce the contest winner sooner, which we did last episode. Second thing, I have a spoiler alert in this episode. You'll hear it. If you want to miss the full spoiler about Days of Future Past, fast forward about a minute from when I give the initial spoiler alert. It's minor, I promise. All right, thanks a bunch. We'll see you on the other side. The Reserve Pool, Episode 13, X-Men.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Reserve Pool. Of course, we are a podcast about dice masters and, of course, the dice mistresses out there because we are equal opportunity. This is Dave.
This is Katie.
And this is Evan.
And this is our show. But before we get to it, as ever, Twitter at The Reserve Pool. Of course, interact with us at mailbag@thereservepool.com or Dave, Katie, Evan at thereservepool.com. Depending on who you want to talk to. And on BoardGameGeek, we have our guild there. We have some polls going here and there for character reviews. And, of course, that little heart on BoardGameLinks. We'd also love it if you gave us a review on iTunes. Help us get the word out there and let us know what we're doing, whether it's good or bad. So, with all of that out of the way, I've been curious if you guys have done anything decidedly non-Dice Masters lately. No, actually, I usually let you guys go first here, so I'm going to go first and say that I just finally got and have played multiple times now Splendor, which was nominated for the Spiel des Jahres this past year. Unfortunately, didn't win, and while I haven't played the one that won, I think this one should have won. And this game is awesome. I don't know why I like it so much, but it's basically, the components are incredible. It's like these poker chip things that you're collecting that represent gems, and you're trying to buy more like sources of these gems, whether they're mines or whatever else, and you really build up an engine, and then you can buy better things, you get more points, and then if depending on how good your engine is, you get more points because these nobles come to visit you and whatever else, I guess because you're so darned rich. And it is just fun. You will never, ever, ever walk past a table of people playing this and witness people like gabbing and laughing and slapping each other on the back or whatever people do when they're playing really, you know, party games and stuff like that. But I guarantee you're going to see people staring at the board intently, scratching their heads, really thinking. But I tell you, it is so much fun. You would look at me and think, he's bored. But no, I am enjoying the heck out of this game. It is awesome. It's just, it's very thinky for its rather lightweightness.
Yeah. The other thing that he's leaving out is people giving other people death glares when they take the card, they reserve the card that they were about to buy.
It feels to me like Seven Wonders and Ticket to Ride. And I don't know exactly why, but I think this is going to be my new gateway game of choice. This is surpassed Ticket to Ride as the gateway game that I introduce people to. And before people say, but you just said that people don't talk a lot during this, show me a real game of Ticket to Ride where people really talk other than, oh, I wanted that color, or, oh, that was the route I was going to take. Ticket to Ride is stare at the board, take some cards, and wait for your turn. Now, if you have good friends, of course you're going to talk during it, and you'll do the same during this game. But this is my new go-to gateway game. Definitely. Hands down.
All right. That is quite the endorsement there.
I love it. It's fun.
Yeah, I can also heartily endorse it. I've been playing it a good bit lately, too.
I am boring. I'm playing a bunch of iPad games because I can play them at work.
Yeah, you were confusing me earlier with this one game that you're playing, right?
Yes. It is called Summoner's War, which is different than Summoner Wars. So I confused several people when I was like, oh yeah, I really love this game. And they're like, oh, then you'll love this. And I'm like, no, that's an entirely different variety of game. That is not what I want right now.
Right. Yeah, she was talking about this. I got back. We were taking a quick break in between doing a couple other things before we started this episode. And I get back and I hear her talking about this. And then she's talking about card rarities, which don't exist in Summoner Wars. It's like almost like a miniatures game, but played with cards. It's pretty cool. If you haven't played it, you should. There's a free version on the iOS, which gets you a taste of it. But even that isn't the best first taste. But at least you can try for free. Anyway, then she's talking about rarity. I'm like, Wait, what game?
this is not the same game I thought you were talking about. So yeah.
That's awful close. I don't know how you can get away with Summoner's War versus Summoner Wars. Plaid Hat better get off their butts and make sure that nobody's coming close to their trademark here. Plaid Hat put out a great game with this, and they actually have a new master set coming out soon. I would imagine we'll see that at Gen Con or slightly later. I'm sure it'll first be for sale at Gen Con, which is coming up in just a few weeks. And anyway, hopefully some Dice Masters news out of there too. All right, with all of that said, let's get on to the Dice Masters discussion. Bye, bye, bye. Are the rules getting you down? Us too. That's why it's time for Factor. All right, for Fact Talk today, we have something that's fueled a little bit by our discussion of Angelo Fortunato recently and his minus two attack and defense effect being active all turn, even if he's rerolled. Now, this is not quite right, but we'll get to that in a moment. So he wants to know, does this mean that if I have him fielded, my opponent can't field characters with a defense of two or less because he would immediately take two away from the defense, lowering it to zero, knocking them out? Short answer, yeah, absolutely. Could I then tag Venom with one of the other minus X attack defense characters or stack a wall where nobody would be able to be fielded without immediately being knocked out? It would seem that this is totally possible because Venom is active, so the minus two AD should be immediate, right?
Well, you can stack Venom and Doom for a total of -3/-3 to all non-villain, non-fist characters, I think it is. I mean, the effect of Angelo Fortunato is if you field someone who has two or less defense, they're immediately knocked out. I will note that all of their fielding effects do take place as per WizKids rules, the first round that they published. So if you have, say, for example, one of the Storms that rerolls on fielding, she still gets to do the rerolling, perhaps even targeting Venom.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, she would still be knocked out again as per the rules.
Right. And the one thing I want to correct here that he posed here, this effect is not active even if he gets rerolled. It's just that Storm would already be knocked out before the reroll happened. She would basically be knocked out on field. But if he's rerolled into energy and he's gone, then the -2/-2 is gone, and you can start to field characters again as you normally would. The other thing that you have to watch out is, exactly as Katie says, you're going to be vulnerable to those when fielded abilities. So if you do this, so that's dangerous. So there's a lot of stuff your opponent won't be able to do, but all you need is a Storm to reroll you, and all of a sudden that's an advantage that you don't have anymore. Plus, yeah, it affects your own characters.
We did actually talk specifically about this two episodes ago. Any character who was already fielded continues to be affected by Angelo Fortunato for the duration of, for the remainder of the turn, whereas new characters being fielded will no longer have the Angelo Fortunato effect against them because bonuses, once acquired, have been acquired for the whole turn. And the -2A, -2D is considered a bonus. Thanks, Venom.
Negative reinforcement, I suppose.
If you really want to be specific about it, a malice, but...
Nerd!
I thought that was fine, actually. Not nerdy at all.
I'm just teasing.
Oh, okay.
Word nerdery is legendary.
Yeah.
Indeed, but it is.
But yeah, you're totally vulnerable if you do that, just because, you know, one, it does affect your own character. So if you don't have stuff of your own coming out to kind of help, you know, it's beefy enough, then they're not doing anything either. So you better be taking advantage of when fielded abilities as well, if that's the strategy that you're running, right?
Yeah.
Evan, anything?
What? Yes.
Yes, I agree.
I agree. What were we saying?
Yeah, I mean, what you end up having is, if you're bringing Venom to the table, you really do have to be built around his debuff, for sure. You're not affected by Venom's debuff, but you have to be aware of what that means for your opponent. And again, being able to take advantage of your, for example, Hawkeye Longbow, or Storm, Windrider, or I think those are the two big on-fielded beasties at the moment, because they can recycle those characters very easily.
Yeah, to clarify, Venom wouldn't affect you, but I believe Doom does. Yes, exactly.
Reed
so you don't have sidekick. You can't get sidekicks then. Some of your lower level small characters are gone, etc.
Yes.
So, cool.
With that, it's time to move on to our uncanny, or perhaps even amazing, feature about the X-Men. Most people are probably familiar to some degree with the X-Men, either from following the comics that have been coming out since, I think, the 60s?
Yep.
60s.
Progressing from ridiculous yellow uniforms to slightly less ridiculous uniforms to all kinds of crazy stuff nowadays. Or from the cartoons. I know I was pretty much introduced to the X-Men through the 90s cartoon. I'm pretty sure Dave also has fond memories of that.
Especially that theme song.
Yes.
That gets me pumped up to this day. That's sad.
Or simply the movies, of which one has recently come out.
And several more have less recently come out.
Yeah, significantly less recently come out.
And others will be coming in the future.
Indeed. But with that, with the days of future past gone, I think it's time we talk about the X-Men in Marvel Dice Master. Personally, I mean, I have to say, one of my favorite current X-Men, Jubilee, isn't there. So in terms of, you know, who am I really looking for about the X-Men? It's odd, because Beast is really the crowd favorite now for purely, in terms of absolutely nothing to do with how popular or not popular he's actually sort of weird in the comic series now, in that he's...
Oh my goodness. Let's not talk about Beast in the current comic book series. If you're getting yelled at for breaking the space-time continuum, you're kind of on the outs with the Watcher. And others. Always.
Who do you think was yelling at him about it?
I know!
Beast is not the most popular person nowadays in the comics, but he's very popular in Marvel Dice Masters. Nevertheless, I always kind of sort of liked him, because he's sort of the nerd with a... You know, the nerd who can be sort of more than a nerd, but at his heart, he's kind of, you know, this goofy blue science geek. And I've always kind of liked that, but...
Yeah, I mean, for me, I kind of like Rogue, and I'm really excited to see Psylocke coming next round. Probably one of my preferred ex-ladies.
Yeah, see, I like Beast because I like Beast, not because Mutate 666 is such a great card. In fact, if I have to say on an island objectively, I love Genetic Expert a lot. I mean, obviously, Mutate is great because it gives you the draw power and all that, but Genetic Expert is just a dangerous card. So, but yeah, I like Beast pretty much for the reasons that Evan says, and... spoiler alert, if you did not see Days of Future Past, stop listening for a moment, lest this be spoiled. It's minor, but whatever, you have been warned. I was so thrilled to see Kelsey Grammer walking down the hall at the very end of Days of Future Past, because I think Kelsey Grammer makes a great Beast, so.
I'm hearing some Nicholas Holt hate.
No. I don't think he does a bad job either, but, you know, It was nice to see that callback to the old movies.
Right. I don't have a problem with the younger Beast. I think he did a great job in the movies that he's been in. It's just more, you know, I thought Kelsey Grammer made a great Beast in those other movies. And it was just really cool to see him there again in the makeup. I know he didn't really particularly care for all the makeup work that was a part of that. Though he wasn't as vocal as some, I think whoever played Nightcrawler really hated it.
Alan Cummings.
Yes. But in any case, I was really, really happy to see that. That was great. So, yeah, but Beast for me. All right. Spoilers are over. Repeat.
I don't think anyone can hear you. They've all got their ears plugged.
No. That's my favorite. Who don't we like?
Out of the X-Men in general or our current offerings?
Our current offerings.
I think I don't like Phoenix very much. not my favoritest card.
She's incredibly hard to use in all of her incarnations.
Yeah.
She's the Thor of the X-Men. Let's be honest here.
Yes, yes. Phoenix is the Thor of the X-Men.
Except that she does help you if you're doing draft and you want that global but didn't get Mr. Fantastic.
Yes, yeah. That is one thing that's good. I think the problem is all of hers kind of gear around being engaged and...
to Cyclops?
Or somebody else. He did dump her once and then she died or something. I forget the order of all of that. And then she came back.
That's not to think about.
It's happened like 3 or 4 times anyway.
Always.
So.
Actually, technically it was more that it was retcon that she never died in the first place. But this is beside the point. Anyway, so I do think the thing is some of them ask for her to be engaged at the end of the turn or at the end of the attack. And that's just not going to happen when your stats start at 5/5.
Yeah. Now, Phoenix Red is intriguing. That's her uncommon one. When she's engaged, and that means that you can, if she has a blocker, you can do this before damage is dealt or anything like that. You may spend 2 bolts to deal 4 damage to target character or opponent. Now, that's pricey, but, I mean, basically you're paying a bolt for 2 damage, and we have, right, people will use the global on invulnerability just to get an extra damage, and that costs a bolt. So, that's... that's not horrible, but then she's 7 cost. Now, don't get me wrong. Her stats are nice, but if there's one Phoenix that I would consider finding a way to use, it would probably be Red.
Yeah, Red has some decentness going on towards her. I think the one that I just straight up don't understand is a Phoenix Genie, her rare form, where it's at the end of the attack step, each character still engaged with Phoenix deals damage equal to the attack. I mean, I'm not even going to say it all. It only works if you've got a trample effect on her, which she doesn't come with.
Or you use smash on her.
Or you smash. How would you smash on her?
You attack with her. Your opponent blocks her with something. You use smash on her because she's blocked and she does no damage. And then your opponent's guy blows up at him.
This is fair. Still, but, kind of convoluted. You need a little bit more going on there. I mean, I guess the cool thing is you can use it on the defensive. So
yeah, you can actually force your opponent to attack with something with the intent of blocking it with Phoenix. You know, some you probably don't want her at her level 3 face for this, but you know, have her block one of those really big tanky peoples who don't have the greatest attack.
Yeah,
or strange.
It's possible. I like her a little better now.
Dave is like, suddenly all of these possibilities I hadn't previously thought of come to mind.
Actually, I'm going to go back and say that as far as abilities in the game are concerned, probably Rogue is my least favorite.
Yeah, Rogue is a bit weird. I know the niche she's trying to fill, but she's too costly for what she's doing, for sure. I've found a decent use for, I think it's the uncommon that steals an action from your opponent in like my Strangel deck, but yeah, right. it's still a little bizarre, and she costs 5, which is kind of too much for what she does.
And she assumes that your opponent has a basic action to steal. The brief note that I want to put in is a lot of people have questioned, well, how is there a possibility where she would be fielded and there's something in the reserve pool, an action in the reserve pool to take since they go away at the end of the turn? I just like to think they're preparing for eventualities. There could be a means in the future where there would be an action in the reserve pool. This one doesn't clear at the end of your turn or something.
Yeah, maybe there'll be a character who, when active, you can hold on to actions through your opponent's turn, maybe?
Something like that, or even just a specific action that says, save this, you know, you can only play this on your opponent's turn or something, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely basic, they're not basic actions, but I think it's one of the Vibranium Shields does remain in play through the turn, but doesn't stay in your reserve pool.
Yeah, yes. So you couldn't hit that. So the possibilities out there. But yeah, even that assumes that your opponent has a basic action to use, so that's hit or miss.
Yes, I will note it does not have to be a basic action. It can be...
Well, yeah, any action.
Yes, and because there is a difference. It does allow the small possibility that your opponent would bring Vibranium Shield or Mjolnir or when Uncanny X-Men expansion comes out, Cerebro, and you would be able to use that even though you didn't pack it. But at the same time, that's a very weird contingency to be planning for.
Yeah, I mean, if using Cerebro is going to be part of your strategy, bring Cerebro! I bet my opponent will bring it.
Yeah.
I have a very specific strategy wherein I only want to use it if my opponent has brought it, yet I have not.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the characters who, I mean, I've always thought of as X-Men, but aren't X-Men in this set. Angel, Nightcrawler, to name a pair.
Yeah, I was a little sad to see Nightcrawler not as part of the X-Men.
He was dead for a really long time.
He was. Yeah, so I was a little surprised about that.
It's a comic. Everyone's been dead for a little while.
No, I'm sure there's somebody who hasn't been dead for a while.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah.
New characters have been...
All right, this is beside the point.
Though hilarious.
Not the point. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that really hits me when I look at these characters, there's a couple more of them than the Avengers. I think it's the largest faction or largest affiliation set is the X-Men. But hilariously, there's no helper characters. There's no Nick Fury to go for the X-Men, including Professor X, does not in any way serve as a boost to X-Men, which I was a little surprised when I saw him, that he didn't have a similar function to Nick Fury.
The closest we have to something that interacts with the X-Men is Magneto.
Yes, former comrade. Well,
gets a bonus for fighting them.
Yes. Former comrade.
Yeah, and that is rather jarring, and it does make you wonder why couldn't they give that Avengers label to maybe one other character. It's true. There are 29 cards that are the X-Men, and there are 22 that are Avengers. But if you throw on the 6 helper cards, right, 3 Furies and 3 War Machines, then that does take Avengers-esque characters up to 28. Throw in the OP reward Spider-Man, and now you have 29, and we're even.
Whatever.
You're not wrong, though. I mean, you're not wrong. We don't have those helpers for the X-Men, so that helps to even up the odds a little bit. The X-Men are a very different animal than the Avengers.
Yeah.
And do note that the new Wolverine coming out is not an X-Men. He is walking his own path and is unaligned.
Very true.
Though I think it's sort of interesting to talk about the numbers right now, because, well... The X-Men and their incredible the Avengers and their incredible friends do total out slightly more than the X-Men. I think that's going to be wildly tipped in the other direction once Uncanny X-Men have come out.
Yeah, I only saw 2 or 3 Avengers going on there.
Who aren't repeats anyway.
Yeah, and Falcon was one that came out that doesn't look like he's going to be an Avenger at all, even though he's spent a lot of time as an Avenger. So,
and he's going to be Captain America soon.
Yes. Oh, let's not talk about that either. Makes me sad. Anyway, yeah. So I do think the thing that I kind of have gotten from these cards, in a very, very general sense, I don't like them as much as the Avengers, because a lot of the heftier price card ones aren't as awesome as some of the heftier priced ones. There's also a lot more expensive X-Men than there are expensive Avengers.
Really?
No, I guess it's kind of even. It's just they've got a lot of weird mid-cost ones going on. Maybe I'm reading things here. I don't know.
There are definitely more low-cost Avengers than X-Men, just because... Well, okay, not exactly Avengers, because I am lumping Fury in here.
Hawkeye and... kind of Nick Fury.
Yep.
Yeah. Whereas with 2 and 3 in the X-Men, I think
Beast and Gambit.
It's the Beast, Gambit, and, well, actually a couple
and
of...
And Storm.
A couple of Storms. So, yeah, I guess, other than Beast, though, I think the Avengers win for the more useful low-cost characters. Avengers and their friends, anyway.
Yeah, for sure. I do think, short of Beast, and let's be honest, nobody uses Storm Row if you're bringing Storm. That is not what you're bringing.
Most likely.
Yeah. Generally not. I mean, I've seen people...
I've seen people use her,
but you're probably using one of the used ones. One of the true removal ones. Evan, what were you saying?
Oh, no. I was saying we have had people asking about Roe in Fact Talk, but...
This is true. With Roe and then the other one that does two attackers, I think it gets rid of when she's engaged. Maybe? Yeah, it was Roe versus Beast, exactly.
Roe versus Beast, yeah, which is kind of a bizarre circumstance.
Absolutely. And I did email that rules... email address that WizKids put up for some clarification there, but that was I emailed them about an hour before they retracted everything, so who knows when we're going to hear back from them. I'm sure they are up to their eyeballs in some splaining to do, so yeah. But, okay. Regardless of any of that, so we have no helper characters, so there's that. What about X-Men related teams? You know, Avengers, we talked about last week, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, they're very much smash you in the face, right? And especially with some of the Hulk smash, right? It, thematically, it works. Smash you in the face, some free fields with Nick Fury and everything that Widow does and Hawkeye picking off your characters. The X-Men play a little bit differently, don't they?
Yeah, they don't really play well as a team, to be really honest. They're kind of a lot more scattered, and most of them I don't really like on their own. I think Professor X is, I thought he was going to be really awesome, but I guess from a practical standpoint, I've never really used him. Colossus isn't that good if you have an assassin to go with, you know, to go against him. So I don't know. There's a lot more X-Men that I've found less use for than Avengers. I mean, Avengers is pretty much Thor is my not happy Avenger.
Well, I actually kind of disagree, because I think that Wolverine, in at least his top two forms rather than his common, is very useful depending on the circumstance on his own. But I think that the X-Men characters make up the core of some of the more control-oriented teams that you see out there, especially with Beast and Storm. Occasionally,
and Gambit.
Exactly. And sometimes you will see Professor X within those decks. And absolutely, Cyclops is a favorite board-clearing condition for some of those as well. I think we see the X-Men, I think they do work together as a team, just in a very, very different way. Almost a more reactive way, but also in a bit of the controlling the board way when you talk about, again, you know, take Beast, Storm, Gambit, Professor X, throw in a couple of globals from like maybe Green Goblin and or Mr. Fantastic, and pepper in another, maybe Cyclops if looks could kill, and you have a potential for a winning team there.
Yeah, though I think that winds up being less they work together as a team and more their abilities work really well, therefore they go well together. It's less they're designed to work together like the Avengers are, and more these guys just have really good abilities, so if you clump them all together, you wind up with a good team.
Well, that's true, but they complement one another because the Beasts let you get to the... Actually, no, I'm going to go back to a different way.
Yeah.
There are two things that I would say to that. One, I guess that's a little ironic considering that the X-Men are put together to be a team, and at least in the most recent movie, the Avengers actually are at odds with one another for much of the film. But if you think about a lot of the X-Men movies, at least recently, you don't see them exactly working together. You sometimes do, but it's like Wolverine does this really awesome thing. Now Gambit does this really awesome thing. Now Storm's eyeballs turn white and she does this really awesome thing. It's a lot of individual stuff within the battles. You don't see them working as a team as much as maybe they should, except for in the Danger Room at the beginning of the second movie when they're fighting the gigantic Sentinel.
Yeah, I guess my big thing with the X-Men is so many of them cost so much, you know, that you're not going to really want to bring many or most of them to the table all at the same time. You know, like Cyclops, if looks could kill, and Colossus, I forget which one, Peori Rasputin maybe, are the big, like, do lots of damage characters. I don't see any reason to have them both.
No, not a chance.
Right. And, you know, again, Phoenix I would in general not bring, except in the draft conditions as we've discussed. Wolverine's kind of fallen out of favor, even though I like his formerly Weapon 10 rare.
Me too.
I guess kind of the beefy ones, you sort of maybe like would like one X-Man, like at the for your capstone. And I think the big thing is that you've got Storm and Beast and Gambit, who all are really our go-to utility cards. So that's a big thing that those characters you're going to see in a lot of decks because those cards are really good.
Yeah, and of course Gambit, as we've seen, can be very situational. If he fits the deck, he fits well. If he doesn't fit the deck, it's pretty obvious. But yeah, that's true. So yeah, to your credit, Evan, they don't really work together so much as they have awesome abilities that happen to combine well. But I don't know, in the end, that's sort of the same thing. And if I wanted to make a good X-Men themed team, I think the tools are there to be able to do it, as long as you can, just like we did with the Avengers, as long as you can pull in another one or two, maybe three characters. But still, that's 5 of 8 that are X-Men.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, mostly, there's just so much more utility in the X-Men, and there's so much more damage in the Avengers. And there's so much more useless beefy guys in the villains, and there's so and there's so little Sue Storm in the Fantastic Four.
Little Fantastic Four.
There are so little Four in the Fantastic Four.
Well, okay, so now we have covered, except for the Fantastic Four, and we may wait until we get Sue Storm to actually talk about them. Because it's kind of silly to talk about them without her here. But other than the Fantastic Four, we've covered everybody that has an affiliation. How much did the... other than, like, some of the villain rerolls, like we talked about, you know, the worry about Magneto and so forth, how much does affiliation really matter here in terms of success with the game? I think... aren't some of the most powerful decks a little bit of everything?
Yeah, I don't think there's any such thing as like an affiliation deck, except in the most general of senses. I can't imagine putting together a deck without Beast. I mean, if you're going to be competitive, it's one thing to voluntarily restrict yourself, but you know, I can't imagine not wanting to bring Beast. And of course, most people are bringing Sarina or sometimes Hawkeye, depending. I just don't see the compelling need for that to happen. Maybe once Team Up, the OP participation for month one, starts to see some more general use, maybe we'll see some more thematic teams. But or maybe once Uncanny X-Men comes out and we get more choice in the X-Men, I could see that happening. But not yet.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the basic actions that come with Uncanny X-Men. Have they said if they're going to be the same or it's going to be completely new basic actions?
I would bet you $5 they'll be new. Completely new. I am very, very sure that they are. I think I read it somewhere, but I'm not confident saying that I definitely did. But I'm pretty sure they're going to be new actions. So we'll maybe start seeing some new meta from those as well.
And that would be good. I was watching, I think, the Q&A that Tom Vassell of the Dice Tower did recently, and somebody asked him a question about Dice Masters, and Tom's doesn't really do the competitive side of things. He just plays for fun. He says he gets characters that he thinks, hey, I like these characters, and that's how he plays. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, well, he had fun playing the game. And I think that this is a great game for that, to be honest with you, especially at this point. But he did indicate that from what he knows, there were a couple of lessons learned as far as the cost of characters, like the purchase cost for this next upcoming set, they may have actually done some tweaks. So one, that will be nice to see. But otherwise, I don't know exactly how much information he had to go on with that, but generally he knows stuff. He hears things. People talk to him. He's one of the most prolific people out there doing what he does. So I'll take him at his word until we have reason to not. But yeah, otherwise I'm actually starting to fall into the camp. And I thought of this, Katie, cause you mentioned about Beast, that Beast maybe shouldn't exist. Like, you know, and then I think, well, you know, but then we want a Starina counter, but of course Genetic Expert is even better than Mutate 666. And as far as Starina goes, yeah, I'm starting to fall into the camp where maybe Beast is a little kind of broken, not in the sense that he's too powerful for what he does, but in the sense that like happened in Magic with Skullclamp, where every competitive deck almost requires him.
Yeah.
Aren't decks that have won without him, because there are. And I think actually Sean in our guest post did not include Mutate 666 in his, but I could be wrong on that. But the vast majority have him and need him. And that's not good either. I think if they're going to ban a card, they maybe should ban Beast.
Yeah, I do think the only problem with that, the way I see it, is we're looking at competitive play that is supposed to take place in 17 minutes, as we talked about in our last podcast. And if you want play to go fast, that's what Beast is for.
And there really aren't any other even vaguely logical options. I mean, Gambit doesn't helps you get through your dice bag faster, but he's not really a draw more solution.
No, and neither is gearing up, even though people like to use it that way for some reason. I don't see the justification there.
No, it's not, and Beast lets you bank things for later, but if your first two turns for a lot of people are as many Beasts as possible, and then I'll execute my strategy versus
starting
to execute
strategy.
Your strategy. Yeah. So, I mean, if those are two turns that, I mean, they go fast, I guess, but I don't know. I'm starting to come around on it. I still like Beast. I'll still use him. I think he's a useful card. You need that draw engine in a game like this, but he maybe at least needs the Nerf bat in some way. I don't know.
Honestly, I think just adding one to his purchase costs would do it.
Yeah, because then you can't stock up and get two for two turns. Because that's really where it becomes a little, like, eye roll. Is because he costs two, and he's too awesome.
Or move his die limit to two on that card. Maybe move the die limit to two on that card.
That could work, too.
But regardless, I don't know. I'm not going to house rule that in. I tend to play the official way because that way I know that I'm playing the way that other people are going to play. That's my aversion to house rules. But anyway, yeah. So that was topical because Beast is one of the X-Men. Ha ha. Yes. Ha ha. That wasn't a big sidetrack. But I know it's something a lot of people have questions about. So regardless, I think it's useful to mention. So, all right. Well, once again, we find ourselves at the end of an episode. You might notice that we're hacking off a segment here or there. That's because we're trying to get back to stockpiling episodes. And when we use up all of our reader mail in one episode, it's hard to have reader mail to do the next episode that we're recording immediately after it. So, so anyway, we're going to keep it coming at you. That means that every episode should be a little bit more varied, which is really nice because you won't always hear the same exact segment week after week after week. And we'll see how that goes for a little while. Hopefully, we'll be able to kick really into high gear as Uncanny comes out, as we get news coming from Gen Con, and whatever else happens in this crazy, crazy world of board gaming. So, all of that said, thank you guys so much for listening.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Yep, thanks, and listen to us next time.
Yep, thanks for spending some time with us. We'll see you again in 1 week when we give you lucky number 13, I suppose, when our show becomes an adolescent. Evan.
And now you have learned the way I usually say his name, Evan.
I might leave that in. Is that a problem?
I'd prefer you didn't, but okay. if needs must.
Oh, I want to try to stick to your preferences. All right, that's good. We can stop recording.
And.